Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 90, which will eventually be posted.
Presumably, if you're hearing this, it has been posted at this point. I'm not sure how else that would work.
Yeah, I am still behind. Things have been a little bit crazy at ye olde office. And the free time has not abounded because... you know, I took a little trip for some Beltane beer tasting at the Great American Beer Festival.
An exploratory assignment to, you know, go out into the field.
Yep, I'm on the beat.
Yes.
not just during the show, Ken.
Yes, and it's great that we can, you know, we have the resources to send correspondents out into the field to... report back on the various beers that they have at the what was the official title of this
the Great American Beer Festival.
Great American Beer Festival, yes.
Yeah, cuz it's the largest of its type in the US. Because there were I think roughly 4,000 different beers or something like that.
Now the thing that is a little bit I don't know, annoying about beer like the beer festival that I've been to is that like there's so many beers but you're really not able to taste all of them.
No.
So how do you deal with that, Kevin?
The one thing I liked about this one, because like in previous years, like at, the Columbus Winter Beer Festival, we end up getting the VIP tickets and we end up getting a big glass and they give us like 5 ounces of a beer. You can really taste less beers when you're drinking that much because you're almost drinking half a beer. The one thing that was nice at Great American on Saturday there, we only drank 1 ounce of everything. Like, and they actually poured it to the 1 ounce. They didn't like half the times when it is supposed to be a 3 ounce pour even at some of these. They fill it up to like 5 ounces anyway. You know, there always seems to be a little bit extra, but these people were actually pouring to the ounce and pretty much cutting it off. I mean, you can't be perfect, but, you know, they were in the neighborhood more times than not.
Well, that sounds like the way to do it, really.
So I did get to try more samples than I normally do. Because like I said, normally I probably say it's 3 to 5 ounces and that makes a pretty big difference in how many that you can, how many you can try.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and just from like real estate in your stomach, I mean, there's only so much room that you have in there. Beer will fill up that space. So that's good to keep control of. And as long as you can still taste it, I guess.
I ended up trying 39 beers this time around. So that is definitely, I'm not sure that I did that well to keep track of how many I've drank at any of the I've only gone to one other Great American Beer Festival, but, I know that the last couple of years I've settled in at, Columbus at about like 10 beers or so. Will not get me completely shit canned.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good goal not to be.
You know, that is when you move to the 5 ounce, it's only it's a third, yeah, of what I tasted.
So would you say that over what period of time was this?
I think it was from 5:30. To 10.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a pretty decent pace then, I would say.
So it was a little longer of a time frame, I think, too.
Because I was thinking the infamous Hour of Power involves doing 1 ounce shots of beer once a minute for a whole hour. And
right.
48 is not quite the Hour of Power's worth. But spreading that over 6 hours would definitely dilute the viciousness of that. So, yeah, I could see that being pretty reasonable to spread out over basically a whole day. as opposed to trying to do that in 1 hour.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking that if I do that again, and I'm not sure that I can talk the wife into doing that again. I think I could fit in a few more beers and be pretty reasonable still. Yeah. Because I did still also stick to the let's not try to get myself completely trashed. And stayed away from some of the more high gravity beers.
Yeah, that's probably a good move too.
That's another thing that I've chosen to do, much to the disgust of my brother-in-law. I drink a lot of sour beers because they are low in alcohol.
The brother-in-law does not approve or understand this choice of yours.
Yeah, he is definitely a craft beer kind of guy, but he really has a problem with sour beers, which is kind of hilarious. So I make a point of mentioning them on a regular basis.
I feel like sour beers are definitely like, I don't know, I'm trying to imagine like the Venn diagram of like beer drinkers. And I feel like the circle for that one is maybe smaller than some of the other varieties that are out there in terms of like the number of people who like them. It seems like some people really get turned off by the sours, but.
Oh, right.
I guess, to each their own. And,
yeah, it's no skin off my back. Like I really don't care. it's more for me to drink as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's a great way to look at it, Kevin.
Yep. And I'm trying to think. I didn't really have too many sour beers, actually, at Great American, from what I can remember. But I would like to do something for the site eventually for that, but that will require me sitting down for a longer time period than I think is available in the next few days.
Well, you know what can be annoying sometimes, Kevin, when you're not at a beer festival is realizing that you've run out of beer at home or maybe some other supply that you need for your home or your kitchen, your refrigerator. And, you know, it's such a hassle to go to the store these days, Kevin. Wouldn't it be great if you could just have somebody show up with the food and put it right in the fridge for you?
Yeah, it is interesting that Walmart is the company in question that believes that this is a good idea.
So this is like a real thing, apparently. Or at least it's a real plan to roll out this as a thing, at least in a select area. I believe they said they're going to do it in like Silicon Valley. So part of this package, I think, is some kind of a smart home security system / smart lock thing, which will allow a food delivery person to come to your house and be able to like open your door and go in with the food that you ordered and put it inside your refrigerator for you and then leave again. And presumably the door would lock through this, smart lock system. So
right.
There's a bit of a tech edge to it.
Yeah, you are definitely, I guess, available to watch the footage.
Right. And there's a camera there too. Yeah, you're right. As part of the system, which would stream to like your phone and things like that.
Right. I'm not a big fan of the idea.
No, it seems like a lot of people are reacting negatively to this whole concept.
Yeah, like there is obviously, like you said, there are some built-in mechanisms to try and make this as transparent as possible. But I mean, you can still have someone go rogue on you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's obviously a fear for people. It's just strange to have someone you know, have access to your home when you're not there.
I not a big fan of of this concept. Yeah, there's too much that can go wrong in that situation other than them just dropping the groceries off. Plus, I guess I really don't like someone else picking my groceries.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, what if they pick up the wrong avocado? What if they get you a hard avocado instead of a nice soft one?
But I think you gotta be able to, like, give them bad reviews or something. To, like, say...
But then that wastes what you wanted to do.
Well, it'll ripen eventually, right? I guess you won't be able to use it if you wanted it, like, that day or something.
Yeah. You're kind of up Poop Creek if you wanted to use it that day.
That's true. But you can't, when you go to the store, when you go to the store, you can't guarantee there's going to be a ripe one there at all, really.
This is true. But I'm just saying, they could pick wrong.
Yeah, it's true. You're taking that part of the dice roll out of your hands. And putting it into... is someone who may not be qualified to tell if that avocado is ripe or not. We don't know.
Yeah. But again, the bigger problem, in-house. I'm just saying, it's an additional aspect of it that I don't like. Weirder that someone's in the house.
How about you have a cooler outside your house, and then they can put the food in there?
Well, you know, I guess if I look at it that way, I should be used to it. Considering my parents still have milk delivered to their house in such a receptacle.
From the Swan Man? Is that who does that?
No, the whoever the dairy company is there near Altoona. McMahon's? I think it's McMahon's Dairy.
They deliver milk to your parents' house?
Yeah, we have had milk delivered. Why do you think one of my beers was Milkman's Son?
It's all clicking into place now.
Yeah, that was part of the reason. Yeah, we have always... I thought that you had seen the Milkman at some point. Honestly, like, there were a couple of times where I was drinking late enough that...
I feel like this
I caught the Milkman.
I feel kind of like at the end of The Usual Suspects. Like, all these things are, like, clicking into place for me now. And I'm like, oh my god. There was a Milkman. Well, how did that happen? Did they know somebody at the dairy? Or is that, like, a service that they offer that no one takes advantage of?
I think it's a service... that is provided everywhere, because I mean I don't think they're the only stop on the road there.
Wow, that is wild. That is wild stuff, I gotta say.
Yeah,
I did not think that in this day and age people were still out there delivering milk door to door, like, yeah, and just milk, like that's the whole deal.
Yeah, it is kind of weird that they've kept that alive there. I'm not quite sure, because that insulated box still is one of those things that you really still need to get that first thing in the morning. Might get a little hot in there.
Right.
You know, sure, it's a little foam insulation in there, but it's not like an ice pack or anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess... would you be responsible for putting ice in there then?
I would think so.
In this scenario, in our imagined scenario, our somewhat less creepy imagined scenario of having a cooler outside rather than coming inside to deliver your groceries.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my parents have it done, so I guess I'd be okay with that. You know, because they aren't accessing your house.
Right. But I guess I'd be a little bit worried that somebody would mess with it, so maybe you would need to have, like, a lock on there or something?
Well, yeah, that would be kind of weird, because you would probably need, like, a mini fridge out there. And everyone can't get into that mini fridge.
No, you wouldn't want that.
Uh-uh.
But I wonder how big would you need it to be? And could you take, like, would someone just take the whole thing? Like, that could be another problem, I guess.
Yeah, it could be a problem. I don't know. Could you put them just into like an ante room? It's just a room. The refrigerator like covers the other door.
So would the installation of a room be covered under
A
the
cost of the service?
service?
I don't think it would be. I don't think it would be.
That could be a slight flaw in this business plan, but we can keep working through this. I mean, there's no reason that Rome wasn't built in a day. We can work through some of these hurdles, I'm sure. And maybe
Right.
Walmart will work through some hurdles here by
Oh, well, again, they obviously thought about ahead of time just some trying to control the backlash, but they still got the backlash, you know.
But sometimes I wonder, like, technology starts out as being like something that's creepy, and then kind of people get to accept it, and
Oh.
it's not as big a deal anymore.
Yeah.
So if this kind of like goes over well, I guess I could see it taking off. If people can come to trust it, I guess. But that's probably a big if.
Oh, right. And you're right. I do agree. Like, it could catch on, and then it's, you know, not something that you think about very much. But I guess I do enjoy the shop, so it doesn't really
Oh,
bother me
you like going
too.
to the store?
At least the planned trip to the store, the extra trips during the week can get a little annoying.
Yeah, I feel like I've gotten better with my planned trips in terms of mapping out my grocery list to have it in order of like the different departments. I feel like I'm getting to the point where I'm maximizing my
Oh, yeah,
time in
because
there.
I definitely write everything in order of how you walk through a grocery store.
Right.
And I'm glad that both of them that we go to both walk the same way. So that makes things really convenient.
Yeah, that's a smart way to do it. Just a free tip out there for all of our listeners.
Just to show you
Just
how
value.
not cool we are at this
Yeah, our hot tips
point.
are ordering your grocery lists to match the
To
store layout.
maximize your time.
Yes. But I think that is a good tip. So hopefully people out there appreciate that. Any other tips we have for our listeners this week, Kevin?
We do have I don't even know how to transition tips for this one. I was trying to think of something.
Some travel tips, maybe?
Travel tips could have gone that route. Because there was this gentleman. Okay, he wrote the article too. Pablo Iglesias Maurer in the it's places in the idyllic 60s postcards have transformed into scenes of abandonment. And he has taken photos of an abandoned resort that, well, several resorts. I believe it's four resorts in the Poconos Mountains in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so these places, I guess, were probably built in the 60s, it looks like, during this this time of prosperity. And there's different, like, this the first thing I think he found was this matchbook with a printed cover that had a picture of the pool and people enjoying themselves at
Right.
this indoor pool. And then for all these shots, he's really able to do a pretty good job of lining it up and taking another picture of what it looks like
Yeah, I mean,
today.
he said that it wasn't a perfect shot for shot, but you really could have fooled me because all the locations seem just about spot on to me.
Yeah. I mean, I have stared at these for a while, and I could start to see some things that looked a little bit... Angles weren't exactly perfect, maybe. I don't know, used a different kind of lens or something than they originally did. But this one here that we're looking at now is the one from behind this diving board at a what used to be a pool, I guess. Now it looks more like...
It looks like a skate park now.
Basically, yeah.
Completely graffitied. Yeah.
From this nice, shining, new-looking pool. Kind of modern-looking, I guess. Or, what would have been considered modern?
Well, it was definitely modern. That was one of the things that I was interested about, because they didn't mention... because they did mention Grossinger's is one of the resorts. But a couple of the resorts were remained nameless.
Mm.
There was a real modernist feel. Yeah, because they don't say who the architect is, but I mean, it is definitely a striking design that not just Joe Schmo Architect is probably going to do.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like an obvious choice to me as a way to build a building. The top is really, overhanging.
Yeah, it's a giant... It kind of looks like a giant circle, but this part of the circle down below... There's only, half of the circle down below. And up above, that upper circle is acting as a... is a porch. Well, balcony.
Yeah, so there's a lot roof. Of, cool pictures of the architecture and, interiors as well of these different places that had been resorts, back from their heyday to today, as they're basically abandoned. And it is an interesting article also, I think. This guy seems like a... interesting character, I guess. From saying the one scene that he said was when he was he had gone into one of these abandoned properties on Christmas Day and played a few frames of bowling in one of their the abandoned bowling alley there.
And I'll tell you what, the abandoned bowling lanes, do bring back, the memory of, you and I being pin monkeys.
That's right. I don't know if these ones are, it's hard to say. I bet you these are automated. They were automated.
Right. I would imagine that initially it looks like they were automated.
Because long-time listeners may recall us saying our first professional experience. Well, no, at least my first professional experience was working as a, what did you say, pin monkey?
Pin monkey, yeah.
This was at a very old bowling alley in our school auditorium basement that did not have automatic pin setters, so you had to have a person down there to jump down and set the pins and roll the ball back. So that was very interesting. At the time, I just couldn't believe that was a real thing. And
yeah,
it hasn't gotten any
less surreal. But
easier to believe.
Yeah, because that was either my first professional experience or announcing at the Little League would have been the other first choice.
I didn't know if you had been mowing lawns with your brother before that or not.
I was 13. Oh, yeah, I could have been mowing lawns with Ron already. That is a possibility.
So I don't know. But it was close to being the first, I guess.
Man, I had a lot of paying jobs when I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
I had an option for three different jobs.
You were rolling in the...
I was hustling.
Yeah.
I was hustling back then.
You were pulling in the dough back then, no doubt. But yeah, I feel like this was, the photography makes this really interesting to look at, and
oh, yeah.
I don't know if we can convey all of the. I mean, just there's something about obviously seeing something, you know.
Well,
the kind of hope and optimism that are shown in the original, like,
photos,
like the postcards or the, yeah, the original, like, marketing materials, and then to see, like,
what it is now. And I guess that's the other thing that's kind of interesting about this one. Like, you would think that since this area of Pennsylvania is very beautiful and there are a lot of cabins and whatnot up there, it's kind of surprising that even at least if the location did not, well, I guess maybe the location's terrible or something. Like, you wonder why it failed since there are other things up there, like, or maybe why it wasn't redeveloped instead of, you know, actually, all these structures look like they're pretty much completely intact. You know, like, they look, they're neglected for sure.
Yeah.
But they don't look like the structure is completely crumbling at this point either. Like, it's kind of a state that, to me, you don't see much in the U.S. Like, usually it's redeveloped, or, you know, even if it becomes abandoned, it just gets wiped out. And, you know, nature just grows back by itself there. But the buildings are still there on this site, so that's kind of interesting to me.
Well, yeah, some of them seem to be in better shape than others, maybe, because there was at least one that it looked like had significant amounts of, like, plants growing inside or moss or something green going on there.
Oh, yeah.
And some, yeah, that one, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a residential building. The residential buildings didn't seem to change as much as some of the larger spaces. I think something happens when it's a larger space too.
Yeah, like this, that one there of the big kind of common room.
Yeah, the lounge, so to speak.
Just looking like homeless people have been living in there for a little while, maybe. I don't know.
And, yeah, and speaking of modernist, I wasn't surprised when they mentioned that the one building was a Mies van der Rohe inspired building by another architect by the name of Morris Lepidus. So, and he is the godfather to the Miami modern look. So, you know, he has some claim to fame, and it definitely looks very Mies, the building there. So you could look up any of his material because, yeah, it definitely feels inspired by him.
Yeah, I mean, that to me isn't look as exciting to me as some of the other ones, but it's strange to see. This one looks like there's a lot of windows that are knocked out these days, you know, today, and
oh,
I'm sure that the elements are getting in there to kind of
wreck the interior.
Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, I mean, they definitely put some money into this situation, because there's a movie theater that's abandoned. Like, there are a lot of buildings in this area that were abandoned. I guess that's another kind of striking thing about it, is just how it just takes up a lot of territory, all this stuff.
Yeah, it seems like it's just sort of people withdrawing from the area, maybe. Like you say, if there was, like, the demand for people to be there, it seems like it would be make more sense to invest in redeveloping or refurbishing.
Yeah, because I mean, the buildings do look beautiful. Maybe they don't function the way that they used to, but I mean, there are a lot of downtown hotels these days that have retrofitted to become modern. Even so, you would think that something like this could do it. But yeah, it's a really the guy did a really great job of trying to take these pictures shot for shot. So it's just really an interesting article to go through.
Yeah, and he seems like a unique individual, so it's worth checking out this article with the pictures. It just struck me as something you wouldn't see, and hey, it was in Pennsylvania, so that's kind of half of our name there.
Yep, always have a tie-in.
Of course, everything 100% always has a tie-in.
Always, just like I do always enjoy bringing up some wrestling topic.
Yeah.
So, the fact that you decided to bring this one to the table, because it was on Deadspin, and it is somewhat appropriately titled, Falling from High Places Might Be Shane McMahon's Best Skill.
Yeah, that's probably one of the better headlines that we've come across here.
And at least with the content of the article, it certainly seems like they are trying to state their case for said headline. I do not feel like they're overstating what they think of his business acumen.
Yeah, no. It's not a very flattering picture that they paint here in this article.
No, not even a little bit.
So do you remember... I don't know. How have you felt about Shane McMahon in terms of his, I guess, performance on TV or in the ring?
It's kind of interesting. He has done very well in the ring. Everyone was worried about him not having a good match with AJ Styles. Because AJ Styles wasn't much of a brawler, and he was more of a wrestler's wrestler. And they had a great match. You know, is it one for the ages or anything like that? Probably not, but they still had a better-than-I-expected match. And, But Shane McMahon does certainly depend upon the spectacle maneuver.
Now, I can remember back in the day, it was funny reading this article because it reminded me of some of these things, like Shane McMahon versus X-Pac as like his first wrestling match. And also versus, Ken Blackstone?
Blackman,
yes.
Honestly, that was one that I'm like, oh shit, I completely forgot about this one. Like Steve Blackman was kind of forgettable.
Steve Blackman, that was it. Yeah, yeah. He did not have much of a personality, as I recall.
No.
He kind of had this thing he would do where he would just kind of give this stare. Like, make his eyes go kind of big.
Yeah, because he was a former karate guy. And, yeah, he was kind of supposed to be dead serious.
Mm-hmm.
And,
doesn't always translate well.
Yeah, it really did not translate very well. So it was kind of... Well, Shane McMahon was just starting to become someone that you should wrestle for a little bit of rub, as they say in the business.
Yeah, but I don't know if he was wrestling like week in, week out necessarily, or was he mainly just doing like the main events?
He's mostly just been a special attraction kind of match.
Gotcha, yeah. That seems to be what I remember.
Well, and that's it. That's what I mean. Like, when he fought Steve Blackman, I guess it was a special attraction just because it was Shane McMahon, but it was still kind of early on. You didn't know what you were going to get at all out of that match.
Right, yeah.
But it did start the spectacle part of Shane McMahon's matches as they illustrate.
Yeah, because I think it was sometime after that, I remember our friend Jason catching on to this about Shane taking these crazy falls. And basically, I remember him saying that he was insane. And I believe in the context of looking forward to him in a wrestling match. So it seems like it must have worked for him if that was kind of the reputation he was been trying to build as a kind of a daredevil or a big spectacle, as you say, kind of match.
Hey, yeah. Well, and that was one of those things that, and they mentioned that in the article too, that when they announced Undertaker versus Shane at WrestleMania in Hell in a Cell, I believe, everyone knew that something crazy was going to happen, like automatically. And they mentioned that it even drove ticket sales for that particular WrestleMania. It definitely was a draw. Again, you knew he was going to do something dumb, because even, you know, up to that point, he had always done something crazy. Because I remember him being the first, he stole one of Rob Van Dam's moves, the Van Daminator.
That sounds right to me, but I can't imagine what that is.
It's the Van Terminator. Yeah, it's the Van Terminator, where he jumps from across the ring and kicks a metal object, whether it's a trash can and or a steel chair, usually into his opponent's face from one side of the ring to the other.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So, I think the Van Daminator was just the chair to the face with the a reverse kick.
Wait, so there is a Van Daminator and a Van Terminator?
Yeah, that's why I screwed them up.
Oh my god.
I'm getting a little rusty with my Rob Van Dam moveset information.
I guess that's acceptable. You know, you gotta, clear out some of the old stuff to be able to keep track of all this new stuff coming in. I haven't, been following wrestling as much recently, I guess, but... it seems like Shane was absent there for a little while in terms of not being part of the show.
Yeah, because he did go off on his own for a while.
And from the article, it sounds like he was not really successful in his other business ventures.
No, and it sounds like even as he's... Yeah, pretty much from the time that he left until the time that he came back, he was not successful.
At least the one company seems to still be in existence.
Another person's direction.
Yes, but if he's at least able to sell it for something.
yeah, it's not a complete loss.
Yeah, for all we know, he could have done okay on that deal. The other deal seems a little more problematic. What was that one again?
Okay. That was all about that. You on demand. Is that the one you were talking about, or was that?
I think that was the one that actually did okay. Sorry, guys. This is probably not the best thing for podcasting, but here it is. That's right. Okay, this was worth the wait, I hope, guys. So in 2015, he was approached about investing in EnviroGrow, a proprietary automated and climate-controlled marijuana growing system that ran 24/7 and was somehow theft-proof. So from that description, Kevin, would you see maybe any potential red flags or anything jump out to you here? I don't know. To me, this seems like a little too good to be true territory.
Well, anything, when I hear the word sight unseen in someone giving money.
Yes.
I automatically think you're an idiot.
Well,
like, I don't care what the investment is.
Yes, apparently Shane liked the presentation enough to invest $500,000 sight unseen, which does seem pretty rash. Especially when it turns out that 2.5 weeks later he went to visit and learned that there basically was no production facility with no finished products or even prototypes available for inspection.
Yeah, I mean, at least he went to check things out on his own.
Yeah, you probably should do that before, though.
You're doing things in the wrong order here.
And I don't want to make it sound like I've never done anything stupid, but I should just point out that this doesn't seem like a very smart thing to do. As a further service to our listeners, investment advice, if you've got $500,000 that you're trying to, you know, invest in some startup, go take a look at their facility first. It's a lot easier than trying to get the money back later. You got to go to court and all this stuff. You don't want to have to deal with all that.
No, sounds like a pain in the ass.
Go check it out first.
Check it out first. That's our sound investment advice.
Well, you know what? That does sound like a pain, but you know what looked like a pain, Kevin, was Shane McMahon falling off the top of the cage in this,
Hell in a Cell again for the second time. And he is our age. Or a little bit older than us.
Well, it looks like he has gray hair these days. Is that?
Yeah, so. he went gray pretty early.
And that is what, 40 feet in the air, would you say?
I believe it's supposed to be 30 foot in the air.
But he does not land particularly well, it seems.
He definitely bounces. And he definitely bounces more off of his right shoulder than anything else. If he has an injury to his right shoulder, I, for one, will not be surprised.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess he's back now in the wrestling, and this is what he's doing. It just seems so strange that people do this for so long. I don't know. Like, people get out of football when they're around 40. But people seem to wrestle until they're like 50s and 60s for some reason.
Yeah, we've been discussing this a lot on the regular show, honestly, just because a lot of the young wrestlers that they're bringing in now are like in their mid-30s. But because they're on WWE TV now, they're new faces and they're young people.
Does it take that long to season a wrestler?
In a lot of cases, some of these guys probably could have made it to the WWE before. Now.
Gotcha. I always did think that Shane was pretty good with the mic skills, I guess. Is that the right term there?
Yeah.
He
definitely.
He was entertaining, or at least compelling. Like, I feel like I usually wanted to see him get beat up, but...
You know. The Mean Street Posse was pretty hilarious.
Oh my god. I almost forgot about that. Wait, who else was in that?
Pete Gass. I can't remember what Rodney's nickname was. And there was one other guy that I'm forgetting.
Truly a memorable group.
Well, yeah. I'm sure that somebody else would have all their names right on their tongues as a wrestling fan. So maybe I'm just exposing myself as a bad wrestling fan.
people across the country are unsubscribing.
Are shame.
Yes.
Shame. Shame.
This guy doesn't know who the... oh, damn it. The Mean Street Posse is. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can't believe they're this far down in the Wikipedia search.
Well, if we see a rise in one-star reviews this week, we'll know.
Joey Abs. Oh. I was forgetting. It was just Rodney. Come on, man. No wonder. I shouldn't remember a name that's as plain as Rodney.
No, somehow you did, though.
Yeah, I just didn't remember the Joey Abs.
Joey Abs. And Joey Abs has his own link. Apparently there is a Wikipedia page for Joey Abs.
Well, for all three of them.
Right. Individually.
Yeah.
They would have us believe. Is that possible? Yes. All right. Let's see. Oh, my God. He has his own Wikipedia page, Kevin.
Yes, he does.
6 foot
but
four.
I mean, that's all of his wrestling cred, though, is being part of the Mean Street Posse.
And that's enough to get your own Wikipedia page.
Yeah. This is a very, very short page.
Yeah, I guess this...
It's more than we have, so...
Right. We don't have anyone Wikipedia page, as far as I know.
Yeah, there's no Stunt Granny Wikipedia page. I hope someone makes that for us someday so that we have an organized set of notes on what topics were on which OPAs.
So do you think you'd be willing to, like, form or join if let's just say potentially Shane McMahon reaches out to us and wants to reform the Mean Street Posse, we could join up and... We'd be guaranteed to get our own Wikipedia page. I mean, that's pretty good reward there.
Yeah, it is.
So, I don't know. Might have to seriously consider that. Shane, if you're out there, hit us up. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, the mole of the WWE hasn't gotten Stunt Granny on WWE TV yet. So maybe we'll reaching out straight to Shane McMahon, who's known for bad ideas, will fall for another bad idea and put us on TV.
Kevin, I can't help but think you might have hurt our chances of actually getting on TV. But yes, you might be right that reaching out to Shane is probably makes the most logical sense in terms of bad idea approving.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get that past Stephanie or Vince or even Triple H.
Triple H isn't going to go for it? No.
Yeah, I don't think any of them are going to bite.
I don't think so either. If we can somehow convince Shane that it's...
But of course, we are making fun of Shane McMahon, so maybe they would bite on it just because we're making fun of Shane McMahon.
You know what? That's good. We're playing our options here. We've got...
Got more people to choose from now.
Yeah, I like this. I mean, that was the plan from the beginning, of course. We also had something. Did we have something else planned from the beginning here, Kevin?
Wow, that came to a crashing halt, much like Shane McMahon did on that announcer's table.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that was my meta, you know, comment subtext, obviously.
Yeah, at least I tried to come up with something earlier and oohed and awed until I just gave up on a segue for the resorts.
Right.
But, yeah, this would be a continuing story and just another one that is a reason I...
Oh, yeah, there was a little bit of an update to a story we did last week.
Yeah, I believe this is why I mentioned at the beginning that I was annoyed with myself. Because this is a going-on story that Stunt Granny is covering with some attention like we haven't done before for current event, unless it's sports.
Yeah, so there's been a little bit of an update with this sonic weapon attack that we talked about
in
our
Cuba.
Last episode. Yes.
Yeah.
There has been a release of the sound that the so-called Sonic Attack was making. But I think if you scroll down on this page, there might be, like, just play that video there. Let's see if this... All right, hopefully everyone's okay out there after having heard that.
Which, honestly, is part of the third paragraph in, and not that that is too deep into the article, but when one of your sentences is, the recordings themselves are not believed to be dangerous to those who listen. It really undermines your point that something could be happening with the sound.
Well, yeah, there's a couple things that seemed interesting to me about this, and I guess it seems weird because not everybody reports having heard this sound.
Oh, right.
So that seems a little strange.
Yeah, it is, like, not very consistent if all of the patients with these weird symptoms haven't heard the same sound.
And this sound itself, I mean, it sounds almost like it could be crickets to me.
It sounds very like crickets have been turned high pitch. So these, or a higher pitch than they normally are.
Yeah, so this is kind of like, well, I guess both, I'm a little bit tipping my hand here, because both of those kind of casting doubt on the idea of this being an actual sonic attack is the premise of another article I was reading that I believe we'll be linking for the show, that kind of explains that this could just be what they call mass hysteria among the community of diplomats in Cuba. The idea being that they're in a stressful situation down there, and it might take something like an injury or getting sick to sort of like your body's are in your system's already stressed out. This kind of like triggers you to like kind of have other symptoms, like psychosomatic physical symptoms.
Yeah, and I mean, I can certainly understand that, because I believe that I had some psychosomatic symptoms when I was in school, because I was stressed out about getting a certain grade. And I got some like hives on my body, and there was nothing else really to explain it.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like that can for sure happen, I think. But and part of the reason to think that too is that there's such a wide range of symptoms that people are kind of complaining of. It seems kind of generalized.
That's the other thing about the whole thing, is that not everyone has the same exact symptoms. So, yeah, that's why another article that you mentioned about linking is more about the mass hysteria kind of aspect that could be happening here. Because it's not like they were, like we mentioned before, the Cuban government let the FBI in to try and figure out what's wrong. And these follow-up articles both kind of said that they haven't really gotten anywhere. You know, they can't find any evidence of anything like that happening.
Right. So, like, there's a lot of reasons to think that this may not be true. Yeah, one of them is that the U.S. intelligence has not said that they, you know, this has been an attack. It's more like, we don't know what this is. It's possible that someone in there is thinking that it could also, you know, be a kind of mass hysteria situation where people are, you know, I mean, people are having real symptoms, but it's not being caused by, it's more being caused by like stress and, I guess, anxiety and things like that.
Right. Yeah. Again, psychosomatic, you know, yeah. I had them happen, so I definitely think that what they're going through is a higher stress than what I was going through. Yeah. I would imagine.
Because I believe that they just started, like, doing, you know, we only started having, like, diplomatic relations with Cuba recently, so probably things are unsettled, and I don't know. I could see there being some stressful situations going on there.
Yeah, I agree. You know, but so
in the other column, I guess, you know, the sound that we're, you know, if you wanted to say that there really was a sonic attack, I'm trying to build the case, you know, play devil's advocate, if you will. This recording may not be harmful because it's not picking up all of the frequencies that were being used in the genuine attack, quote unquote.
Right. If you don't know the answer, then you don't know the answer. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess it's kind of, in a lot of ways, unless you say that it's psychosomatic symptoms, you can't really prove that necessarily.
Yeah.
But I guess the FBI agents would have to experience the pain themselves to maybe believe it.
Well, I mean, even then you could still experience it and like you said, it would still be, you know, psychosomatic. I mean, it's not like it's not a real pain that these people are feeling.
Oh, right.
It's just being, you know, being caused by mental states,
mental burdens.
Yeah, versus a physical cause. So right. It is a strange area because it is, you know, they mentioned in the article that it is real, that the symptoms are real, and it's not like these people aren't suffering.
Right.
And it's not like they want to do this or to feel this way, you know. It's just the way that
the way that it's happening.
Yeah. It's like it is a disease in a way. It's just,
well, yeah, that was the one thing that the other article mentioned, is that it's a disease that needs to be treated just like any other disease.
Right. So I think, to me, on the balance, it does seem there's a lot of reason to think that this isn't an attack. But one of the other reasons that we had mentioned before was, unless you think, I guess, Raul Castro is a good actor and can fake being surprised. Also has nothing to fear from the FBI coming in and investigating.
Yeah, we mentioned that the first time around. Yeah, if you're inviting the FBI in, like, yeah, sure, check it out. Like, that does not seem like something a guilty party would do that, you know, you could probably find answers to in fairly short order.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that they had a recording this week we could play for you guys.
Yeah, it's just kind of an interesting interesting thing to follow up on. And I guess that we can end by talking about the Bell Time beer of the week, Ken.
Yes, we didn't bring the can down, but this was the seasonal fall beer from Land Grant Brewing Company. It's a...
I was trying to open it up here. It's a Scarlet Lager.
There you go.
I just don't have the stats in front of me.
Ah, nor do I. But I will say, it is quite a smooth beer. There's definitely a skeleton on the front. And the name of it is escaping me right now.
Oh, yeah. Skull Session.
Skull Session, yes.
Yes, and it's a very easy drinking beer. If you are into, you know, still like a Budweiser-y type of thing. This one is like just kind of a classic Irish red ale, or at least similar to one. In that there is not a whole lot of hops. The ABV is 5%. The hops is 15 IBU. So it's not very pronounced. So if you're not a hop head, it is certainly can be in your drinking wheel. But yeah, I found it very very smooth and tasty and easy drinking. So
Yeah, it's somewhat refreshing, I would say.
yeah.
Pretty good.
And I haven't checked this. Oh yeah, a friend checked this in, so I don't know who checked this in.
All right, very exciting checking in a new beer.
Oh, Brian.
All
Yep.
right.
So I'm more in line with his rating than the one that's on there. So it's the average. Really enjoyed it. So at DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33, the brand, at Stunt Granny, everybody, have a good night.
Bye.